You know what Nick gets? He probably gets trying to hit a ball out of a fence. Have you ever tried to hit a ball out of a fence?
I have not.
No. Did you see Phil try to hit that
ball?
Oh,
I did.
I saw that.
Yeah, tries to hit a ball out
of
a...
He's looking to see where it went, and then it drops back in front of him.
Only Phil would try to do that.
Only Phil would try to do that, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Let's get into it. Francisco Molinari won the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Phil was Phil, as we were just talking about. And we're going to do a deep look into the gear being used on tour, as well look ahead to the Players' Championship next week. But welcome to Episode 5 of Tee Talk, the golf podcast brought to you by Flagstick.com. My name is Stefan Tiedorf, and there's lots to talk about this week. Before we get into all that, let's bring in the boys. PGA professional and editor of Flagstick magazine, Scott McLeod, how are you today?
I am doing great. Looking forward to talking about a lot of golf things as the spring is upon us pretty soon.
Is it? If there was freezing rain last night.
I know. I'm just trying to convince myself in my mind that spring is around the corner. Yeah. So not all of us are heading to Mexico this week.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that in a bit. Let's bring in our producer, Nick Gallagher. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
I'm all right. All right. You ever try to hit a ball out of a fence? You mentioned you may have.
I haven't. I saw Phil do it, though.
Try to get out of a pool, but you never try to hit.
Not Phil, a fence.
Phil being Phil. I mean, there's a lot to go into about the Arnold Palmer Invitational this week. Let's start there. Phil, on I don't know which hole it was, takes a big old fade left, hits it into a fence, decides he's going to get on the other side of the fence because it would have been OB. It goes right-handed, tries to hit it out of the fence, and then it drops OB, and he ends up having to take an extra stroke anyway. What were you thinking when you saw that?
Well, it was incredible. I was shocked. I mean, I was watching the TV, and I looked at it, and I was like, what's going on, first thing? And it took me a second to realize he was wrong-handed. And then I'm thinking, what's he doing outside the fence hitting a ball? I mean, obviously, if he's out of bounds, the ball must be in bounds. But then all of a sudden, the slow-mo comes, and the ball is going into the fence and dropping down. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, you're the professional. You obviously understand. So the fence must have been the line.
Right.
For when he was OB. So
the golf ball was inside the fence, barely. So the only way he could access it, right, was to hit from the other side.
Which is weird that you can play from it. You can be out of bounds, but...
As long as the ball's in bounds, you can go ahead and hit the golf ball. You can stand out of bounds to hit the golf ball. I mean, now if there's out of bounds stakes there, he couldn't move the out of bounds stakes.
No.
But yeah, so I mean, Phil being Phil, yeah, he gave it a whirl, and you know, God love him. You know, it's great for everybody from an entertainment aspect, and hey, it gave us something to talk about, right?
And it's funny because he goes 68 on Thursday with hitting that stupid Phil being Phil thing, and then goes 10 shots worse, shoots 78, misses the cut, and then this isn't even the best part. Then after this, Phil comes out and goes, I might not play the Players. I don't know if I have a good chance next week. What are your thoughts on this? Because I got a take for you. I'm not very happy with his comments.
Well, I don't know. I'd love to see him. He is there already. He is there already. They showed him on TV today. He's actually arrived already. But whether he plays or not. No, he only has to commit by earlier in the week on Monday, right? He has to commit on Monday.
Yeah.
All right. Which is different than most PGA Tour tournaments. It's the Friday. Him not playing, I don't know. I think if you're going to be ready for... You know, the next major, you got to play under that pressure and get out there and play. It's too big of a tournament.
Okay, couple takes here. There's 0% chance. I'm going to actually say it right now. 0% chance this guy does not play this week. 100%, he's just like, look at me. I'm Phil being Phil. I'm trying to be weird. This is his shtick in my sense. But let's I'm going to argue for him. Yes, he's, what is he, 48, 49 at this point? He's up there. He's got kids. He wants to spend time. He's got to be particular in there. But his reasoning for wanting to miss it is he felt that he doesn't have a good chance at the Players, a tournament he has won before.
I'm thinking, you know, his game is a little bit different as far as his style of play, and maybe he doesn't think he's ready. I mean, he's been a little bit unsure about his equipment changes. He's made a few of those, and he's basically said the Rogue driver is going to stay in the bag for him, and he's not going to make the switch over to Callaway's new product.
So he's not going to have three drivers in the bag or two?
Who knows with Phil, but you know what? Maybe in his mind, maybe there's something else going on that he's not talking about. I mean, maybe it's something from a health perspective. Maybe he doesn't feel he's ready that way, and maybe he thinks he really needs another week of rest off before we head into, you know, four majors in a row in 4 months.
I got a theory. Maybe he found a bookie that has Will Phil Mickelson play next week, and he's like,
That could be something too.
That could be. You mentioned gear. This is a great time. We actually have a great guest that without his the company he works for, we would not know nearly as much about gear that we do and the gear that's being put out each week on the PGA Tour. We have Rob Miller from golfwrx.com, a great interview that we're going to get to later. We talk about gear, we talk about the tour talk. We'll get to Rob in a bit. We're going to still talk about the Arnold Palmer Invitational. We talked a lot about Phil, the guy didn't even make the cut. Let's talk about the guy that won. Francisco Molinari picks up his third PGA Tour win.
He's got five in Europe, and he won the Quicken Loans last year, and now he got his third, and he did it in amazing fashion. So
he did. You and I were texting throughout the day about this tournament, because around when he was going out, we're like, this is exciting, this is gonna be a great tournament, gonna come down the wire. You got Rory right there. You got some big Tommy Fleetwood, Fairway
yeah.
Jesus. Oh, great hair on that guy.
It's Tommy.
Oh, Tom. Yeah, his hair though, just flying. I really wish he finished. But then it ended up being the complete opposite. Once he made that putt on 18, that ridiculous putt on 18 to go to -12, the tournament ended. Nothing happened after that, and I was pretty much bored watching the end.
Basically, there was car crashes after that, and that was pretty much it. And you know, what was neat was the fact that I think what happened after really showed you what the golf course was like. Like, he was playing really hard, and Sam Saunders, Arnold Palmer's grandson, was doing an interview and saying how hard the golf course was.
Sam shot 78. He's probably played 500 rounds on that golf
exactly.
course.
Exactly. So for Molinari to shoot 64 while everybody was, you know, slapping up some big numbers just shows you what he's capable of. And obviously, you know, he won the Open Championship. My question in my mind was, you know, he just made an equipment change. Obviously, he changed his whole bag this week for the first time. And obviously, he's tested equipment. You know, it's not like he's going in cold and has never hit the clubs before Tuesday. But he did make a hole-in-one this week, which was good for his sponsor.
Not bad.
And the other side is that, you know, does this make him a favorite heading into major season? I mean, where do you think that puts him?
I don't think he hits the ball far enough to win at Augusta. He's obviously putting.
Zach Johnson.
Yeah, but
Mike Weir.
That's fair. You got to.
I guess it depends on the weather.
It depends on the course. I don't see him picking up a win at Augusta. Could he win? Would I be surprised? Yeah, I guess I would be surprised because I'm arguing that he's not going to win.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, the guy can putt.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you can putt and you can scramble. You have a chance pretty much every week, and he hits the ball dead straight.
He does hit it straight, and like you said, the big change in his game the last few years has been his putting. He works with Phil Kenyon, who's a fantastic putting coach, and that's made a big transformation in how he's able to score. And he also won the BMW PGA Championship in Europe last year as well, so that was a big event.
He won the Open.
Yeah, well, no, besides, I mentioned the Open already. I'm just adding another one in there. But obviously, he's peaking as far as his game. You know, he's 36 right now. He's getting those bigger wins. It's going to be fascinating to see how he plays heading into the Players' Championship and, again, into Augusta as well. I haven't actually looked to see what his record has been at Augusta, but I'd be curious to have a look and see what that's.
His brother kind of fell off the face of the earth. Eh? He was always in PGA tournaments and haven't heard from him in years.
Yeah, limited status. Playing in Europe. Yeah, so playing in Europe, and I'm not sure what his status is now. So
who knows? In terms of putting, we talked how great of a putter he is. There was a lot of bad putting this weekend. Rory needs to figure out the putter. Because that was, I mean, other than some pretty bad, dumb mistakes this weekend, the putter let him down.
Yeah, I mean, he made that nice one, that 27-footer, I guess, early on three, and then he didn't make a thing after that, like nothing after that. I mean, granted, the greens, you know, as they said, they go on 13, 14, which, you know, I don't fully believe as far as the stint meter speed. But yeah, if he's going to be a contender in any major championship this year or any tournament, he's got to figure that out, the flat stick.
You know who else couldn't putt this week? Did you see Jeff Maggart with that five putt from 9 feet?
I missed that one.
Sounds like
you
me.
Didn't see that.
No, I missed that one. I was away at a golf show for a couple days. So what round was that in?
I think it must have been on. It was Friday. It was on Friday.
Yeah.
He had a five putt from 9 feet. So it's a par five birdie putt. Ends up making. That would be a double bogey if I can count right.
Yeah, occasionally.
On the 18th hole, so on his last hole of the day, which is just like, you're not going to have good thoughts going the next day. The next day, he goes out and shoots 66 with 22 putts.
Golf. 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 That's just the way it is.
It is the best way to...
I mean, Nick, you've ever had a 5-putt?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't say... I know I've had a 4-putt in a tournament, but I don't remember ever having a 5-putt.
I think I'd have more 5-putts than a 3 or 4-putt.
Okay.
That's pretty bad.
Am I wrong?
I'm not going to deny. I can't confirm or deny that.
Have you ever had a five putt?
The green, but.
No, but I one time my dad, that's a great story. So my dad, I don't remember. Let's be honest. If I'm after 3 putts, I'm not putting the 4th unless it's a tournament.
Well, yeah. Granted, that's why I said I had a 4-putt and it was in a tournament. Otherwise, I'm probably the same. I'm probably picking up.
We're playing a nice course in the area. My dad and I in the summers. We had a foursome out there, and it was a 2-tiered green, and he was on the bottom. The pin was up on the top tier, and he put the ball 5 times back to his feet. So it went up to the top of the tier, man. Back to his feet, top tiers back to his feet. And I just remember his buddy on his 5th putt was like, do you need your driver?
I will say I did have another 4-putt in a casual round by myself once. I was actually at Glen Lawrence Golf Club down in Kingston.
R.I.P.
And playing, yeah, unfortunately gone. I was playing one of their holes on the back nine, I guess, 12, I guess, would be really steep green. Anyways, I hit the ball about 2 feet above the hole, 2 feet, and putted off the green. Not enough that I was going to chip, but then I kept putting and had 4-putt. The funny part was I went into the, I went in afterwards and somebody said, oh, what'd you shoot? You know, I was out by myself. And they're like, how did you have a 4-putt playing by yourself? I'm like, what do you mean?
How did you finish the round? Like, if I'm 4-putting and I'm just walking in the car at that point.
I was having a good laugh because the fact that, you know, it was 2 feet above the hole and a putt that I knew that if I missed in any possible way, it was, you know, it was going on like a train down off the green. So it was more funny. I was having a laugh at myself at that point. But yeah, 5 putts. Ooh, boy.
Good for you.
That's a tough nugget. Tough nugget. A
couple other people struggle on the weekend. Keegan Bradley had him and Tommy both had a 4-stroke lead going into Saturday. And I mean, Tommy still ended up keeping it around. Keegan had a 4-stroke lead after 2 rounds and ended up losing by 12.
Yeah, he was 9 over on the weekend. 9 over on the weekend.
That's
so
tough.
You know, is it him? Is it the course? I mean, obviously there were some higher rounds.
It was tough. We all realized that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that kind of turnaround, that's not really good for your brain, especially heading into the Players Championship next week.
One thing I've noticed a lot on the PGA Tour this year, and I mentioned it in an earlier podcast, is the amount of mixed bags out there in terms of gear. But before we get into there, this is one I've never seen. Aaron Baddeley is playing with no logos anywhere to be found. His hat was a blank. His shirt looked like he got it from Walmart. Everything blank. The guy's a player. Like, is T-Talk going to sponsor this guy?
I don't think that's going to happen, but...
I think we got a chance.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, no, he's got no contracts. He's got nothing to slap on his back. Somebody's going to jump on it, for sure, but maybe they haven't come up with the right number. You know, that could be it. As far as what goes in his golf bag, I mean, now there's more money to be made by playing well. If you look at Keith Mitchell last week, winning at the Honda Classic, $1.2 million, you know, with a
is
bit
that
of,
good?
Yeah, that's okay. That's so good. If you think about that, and Brad Fritsch, who's a Canadian, has always mentioned that, you know, he stuck with one brand from when he became an amateur to be pro, had an opportunity to go with another brand. But when he looked at it and looked at the money they were going to give him, he said, you know what, I want to be comfortable with what I'm playing and I have a more opportunity to make money with equipment that I trust and I can play than just jumping to something and getting paid for it. Because the contracts are not what they used to be as far as equipment for high-end golfers.
Well, I'm actually on Golf WRX right now, and I'm looking at Keith Mitchell's bag. He's got a Mizuno driver, Titleist fairway woods, Mizuno irons, Titleist wedges, very mixed bag. Matt Fitzpatrick, who was right up in there the whole tournament this week, very similar. He had a TaylorMade driver, Mizuno irons, Titleist wedges. It's all over the place, and I think that's exactly it, is that you can make more money by playing what's best for you.
Sure.
I've always told people that. You know, it doesn't matter. Not everything needs to match. It's what's best for you, and get that out of your head that it looks great. That being said, Francisco, go ahead, Nick.
Will that bring up those contracts, though?
It can, in a way. It depends on what their contracts are like, as far as some of it's based on how they finish or things like that. But it also will attract contracts as well. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I mean. So yeah,
it can, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's something that you want to jump on, because if the number's not right, or you also want to say, you know what, I'll just continue doing that. I mean, Mitchell played well again, at Bay Hill.
Right.
So, I mean, why is he going to all of a sudden, if a company comes to him and says, I'll give you a couple $100,000. Well, you know what? He made well more than that this past week. So okay. Why is he going to change away from it?
Thinking more than that.
No, and the landscape has changed a lot. I can remember playing actually at Sawgrass. I managed to play there a few years back with a tour player who's not on the tour now and kind of a different soul. But anyways, he was testing equipment at the time. And he knew that after 11 years on the web.com tour, he had kind of hit the jackpot for 1 year. Now, granted, this is probably, 10 years ago when the contracts were big. Automatically, when he left Q School, he was looking at probably $500,000 in contracts right away. 5 or 6 years later, all of a sudden minimum contracts are, $125,000 paid, in quarterly payments or whatever. So it's not as big as it used
to
be.
Unless you're
a superstar. Yeah.
So that's how much you would think an average PGA Tour player is making a year on a bag contract, around $100,000 potentially.
Yeah, it would be more than that once you add in, if we say bag, for an example, but I mean hat, ball, glove, shoe, you get everything that's mixed in there. But just because you make it to the PGA Tour now doesn't mean all of a sudden they're walking the Brinks truck or driving the Brinks truck to your house and dropping $2 million off. I mean, if you look at manufacturers, major manufacturers that have reduced who they have for their, their players that they sponsor, a lot of them now are going to their superstars. They're spending their money there, and they're spending less money on the other end of it. So
it's all about marketing at the end of the day.
Very much. And they have to get ROI for that money. So if they look at, if they're spending multi-millions of dollars on stuff that they're not getting a lot of publicity for, just don't give it because they are on the tour. They got to be getting TV time, and they've got to be doing corporate stuff, and they've got to be doing stuff that's bringing value to your brand.
The best, I think the guy that he needs to send his agent a Christmas card every year is the way Rory McIlroy's contract ended up working with Nike. Now, it's kind of, you don't know the full details, but my understanding is when he signed that contract with Nike is that he was obviously full 14 club bag plus ball plus the gear and yada, yada, yada. When Nike stopped making the clubs, the money didn't change. He's still making the same amount, but now he's also getting paid by TaylorMade to play their stuff.
Yeah. Nike's contracts were exclusive at that point. Basically, they wanted no other brands. They owned you. If you were part of Nike, it was all your clothing, bag, everything that way. With the exception, obviously, Tiger had a little bit of a difference as far as his bag, and he'd have a different sponsor that way, but Tiger's Tiger. He gets his own things, right?
If Tiger says, no, I'm doing this, Nike's losing.
Look, they make custom they make custom shirts for Tiger that
Mr. Woods.
They have a they have a 3D motion model where they'd put shirts on it and build, and it was actually shaped to Tiger's body, and they would make his clothing and stuff like that. But yeah, so when you look at that now, those guys that had those contracts, they carried over just with the clothing, but you can't play equipment that doesn't exist.
That is true. I mean, as I said before, none of this and all this knowledge that we had wouldn't be possible without Golf WRX. I don't know about you, but after every single tournament, I hop on golfwrx.com. I check the what's in the bag. I'm looking at the shafts. I'm looking at the grips. What kind of relationship have you had with Golf WRX in the past?
Well, I've been friends with the owners since 2005. They're guys that I met through other forums, other golf equipment forums, and got to know them. And then we created a little bit of a formal relationship with Flagstick for a number of years, did some editorial for them, helped get them out on the PGA Tour a little bit for some of the credentials. And Greg Moore from there, who's their ninja photographer, does all the amazing photos that you go through.
Every week.
So almost for 15 years now. And he's incredible is what he does. I mean, he's been on the road, he's on the road like every week of the year almost, and it's great to what he does, and it really helps the golf community see what is out there on the PGA Tour.
Well, if you're listening to this podcast, you've obviously been on Golf WRX before, so we're going to send it over to our interview with Rob Miller from their team right about now.
All right, let's welcome to the podcast our guest today, Rob Miller, who is the head of marketing and engagement for GolfWRX.com. How you doing there, Rob Miller?
I'm doing great. Late night podcast. I love it. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us this week. And Stefan, you've never met Rob before, but I've known Rob for a long time. I will say he's a good guy, but drill him with questions. Just nail him to the cross here. So let's talk a little bit about Golf WRX for people that don't know much about it. It definitely has been a website that any hardcore golfer really knows about. But why don't you give us the full premise and the full history?
So Golf WRX started in 2005, and I think, I don't like using the word aficionado, but it was kind of like equipment nuts, gear geeks who really loved golf equipment, things that were different. It might be JDM, a lot of tour equipment that you could, you know, you could get through various connections. And we started out as just basically a message board for everybody to talk, just chat back and forth. Hey, I like this. Did you try that? Did you try that? I have a Steelhead 3 Tour, you know, with a YS7 in it. That's, you know, blah, 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 this and that. So we had really just kind of grassroots beginnings. People would start trading and selling equipment back and forth and just talking about it. And fast forward to today, you know, 14 years later, and we have editorial staff. We've got a photographer that's on PGA Tour every week that takes what's in the bag photos. That's probably what we're most well known for, and trying to keep that as up to date as possible, down to the grip. You know, not just he's playing Mizuno or something. It's, you know, everything, as you guys know. And then, of course, our bread and butter. We've got the largest forum today of any of the major golf websites or anybody that has a golf community. By far, there's and up to 5 million visits every month. So it's become quite large, and it's an amazing ride. I've been doing it basically full time for about 6 years, and it's amazing at what was started before I got there. So I'm by no means taking credit for it, but everybody, we have a lot of people on staff now, and a full headquarters in Dearborn, Michigan, and it's a lot of fun just connecting with regular golfers out there who love the game, love equipment, and love to chat it up.
Yeah, I was brought to Golf WRX about probably 10 years ago now, finding the forum, classifieds, and the tour talk was always something that interested me. You would find there was a random guy on the internet breaking who Ian Poulter was going to use next year with his new contracts. Do you know how many posts you've personally had on the forum?
Oh my gosh, that's a good question. I think now I'm known as like the giveaway and trip guy, you know? So many of them are, hey, do you want to enter this? Or we're looking for that. I'll try to look it up. I have no idea. That's a good question.
Is it that many, Rob, or do you, you know, are you that active in the forums that way?
I would assume, you know, there's always a double-edged sword, because when you try to work on the back end to do good for, you know, the people of the forum and make it a good experience, you have less time to enjoy it the way you did prior to that, you know, so you don't go on there and BS as much. I probably do that on Twitter way too much, you know, but, you know, Twitter allows you to embed GIFs, so it's a little more fun.
That is
for
true.
For me anyway. I'll try to find it.
That's awesome. You did mention one part that I think that brings probably a lot of your visitors to the site, is the what's in the bag. And that, for me with a background in retail, was something that really always helped us, especially after a tournament. You get a big win, say Ricky Fowler comes out on top and somebody wants to come in and try the new Cobra club because they saw that's exactly what he was using.
It's funny that you mentioned something like that, because we get the same feedback from other people. I had a shaft manufacturer tell me that basically we're changing our color pattern of our shafts partly because of you guys. I'm like, what do you mean? And they said, well, you post these pictures and everybody sees that orange shaft that Tiger has, and nobody knows what it is. But when they go into the golf shop, they want to try that orange shaft. So we got to keep up with the orange shaft guys and change our color scheme to make it as simple as possible. Because if you've seen, there's shaft names out there are just, forget it. I can't, you know, you can't remember what it is. I can't either. You know, it's a model, but then all these other alphanumerics on the back end too. So it happens. another instance is, I think it was the I-20 release for Ping. We had an exclusive. We had some people who went in there and did a deep, I almost said deep dive. Dang. can we edit? No, I'm just kidding. We were joking about that.
All good.
But they went and they did a full on, beautiful article about everything I-20. And when this was around the time that I just started working for WRX, I walked into a brand new Golf Galaxy, and there was nothing I-20 yet. It was brand new. We had an exclusive, and they had 16 pages from our site printed out on the counter that were well thumbed through and looked like, you know, Declaration of Independence by that time. And they said, we use these to sell the I-20s. You guys have all the information, and it's fantastic, and thank you very much.
Yeah, I can attest to that. When I was responsible for training all my staff back in the day at Golf Town, which is the bigger the golf industry retail store up in Canada, and I used this exact same thing. I'd print off anytime you guys had the new articles out, and that's how I would train my staff as well.
That's great. It's good to hear it.
I mean,
it sounds like I might need a fitting. I don't know.
Yeah, I know a guy. I don't know if you heard. I think you contacted me around 2014 for an article around the fitter of the year.
I did, and then
logistics.
Probably snowed or something.
I was probably asking for too much money.
that was it. Yeah, we couldn't agree on the whether the autograph picture would be framed.
This is a really good setup, guys.
We should
guys.
Have Rob
really
on every week.
This. Yeah, yeah. you make sure to send him a check there. Rob, I mean, you mentioned this and as far as the influence that you see at retail. And I mean, is that really the position that WRX has really, become based on, you have 2 million unique IPs a month. I mean, you've got that position in the golf world. You know, do you hear that more from manufacturers as well as far as, you said about graphics on a shaft, but, do they look for input from you guys as far as your readers? Do you hear from manufacturers maybe thumbing through some of the threads and saying, we see feedback here on this and maybe we're going to make an adjustment? How's that work?
Well, that's interesting. We do get plenty of comments. You'd be surprised at who's on the site, on the back end, not only, golfers that everybody knows that are club junkies, but people within the industry. So they do take notice. You know, if there's something, there's an issue with a club or this and that. I remember, there was some Adams club issues years ago with, I think it was like the Super Fairway, right? If I remember correctly what it was called. There were, you hear some feedback of some early adopters and they watch, they don't come to us per se usually. But when we get together, we're not shy about, sharing our opinion of this and that. But there's plenty on there and they do take notice. And a lot of it is good too. Like when there's someone comes on there with an issue with the club, chances are we'll get contacted and say, hey, can you reach out? And we'd like to help this person out. It's a one-time thing. I'm sure it's not a big deal, but chances are, hey, if there was an issue, they want to get that club back and they want to take care of the person. So it does a lot of good that way. We get more of those than you would probably imagine, I guess.
Obviously, you say that, you've got that feedback with the manufacturers, with the consumers, you've become that sort of conduit in between. How do you sort of develop those relationships with those manufacturers to get more involved with the consumers?
Well, I think that's where we have a pretty unique position overall. Our relationships have been developed over years with manufacturers. It really kind of started like we were talking about earlier. I can't remember if it was offline or not, but just the fact that, someone could come on and they could post a picture of a club, and this is back in the infancy, something, they post a picture of a new release, and then all of a sudden we get a phone call or an email and saying, hey, that's not their property or something. It was a stolen pick. And I'm talking like in our beginning of WRX. And then some relationships were developed that way. Others were developed originally from going down to the PGA merchandise show, which you've been to 48 times. And
we love a good jab at Scott's age on this podcast.
I appreciate that, Rob. Thanks for chiming in on that one.
It's good. You're a Jedi down there. So, you know, we would go out and we'd be there taking pictures and people would be like, who are you? Well, Golf WRX is a forum and, you know, it's equipment junkies and this is what we do. And now there's so much down there, especially with the advent of social media and so many individuals having, you know, their Instagram is their brand, you know, they are their brand on Instagram. It's a different world now. It's fascinating to see, frankly. But so, you know, those relationships started years ago. So we're not like a new player as far as having relationships. We had to say, hey, listen, we're cool. You know, we're not trying to cause problems. You know, this is not why WRX exists. We love equipment and, you know, we'd love to have a relationship with you guys. So for us and having the community on the back end and then also editorial on the front end, you know, we can say and take a driver and do a review of it or at least, you know, dive into it from an informational standpoint. But on the back end, I can get that club in people's hands and have them as a community test it. And then that person, you know, will post their results and talk about it over and over again in a particular topic. And the people that he has a chance to reach out to, he actually has a relationship with from a community perspective. It's not like putting a, you know, some sort of article on social media and then people doing their little comments and that's it. Those people have no relationship with each other. You know, what we can do is we can, especially for, you know, a new product or even a new manufacturer, is we can get that in a real golfer's hands and have them talk and have people ask them questions directly. So it's pretty unique and it's very cool to see.
So your title at Golf WRX is the head of marketing and engagement. What does that mean? What do you do on a day-to-day at the company?
We have, you know, we're not a huge company. We don't have a lot of red tape. And, you know, it's not like I can call up an assistant to do what I need to do. So it could be anything from graphics to interfacing with OEMs to getting an address of a member to send a piece of equipment to you know, basically creating content as well, just from a, you know, informational standpoint. You know, for me, there's many different hats that I wear. It has a lot to do with, except for the editorial side, exactly what I explained as far as on the back end. You know, we do giveaways, we do testing threads. There's other things that we have initiatives with on social media as well, and also a podcast co-host, trying to figure out, all right, what are the current topics this week? If anything, and I think you guys would probably know this too, is, you know, hosting a podcast, you really have to stay on top of things because every week you've got to create this relevant in the moment kind of content. So it's been actually really good. You know, it's really kind of giving you a little bit of a charge when you're not doing kind of, you know, a lot of the day-to-day things. Because regardless of how cool the job is, you know, it does become, you know, you do have tasks to do. Yeah. And, you know, when you can branch out and do things a little bit different, I enjoy it a lot more.
Now, you mentioned editorial there. I know back in the day, I wrote, I think, 120 stories for Golf WRX. There wasn't a lot of editorial going on back in those days, probably 8 to 10 years ago. How has all that evolved? And, you know, how have you decided to take on different channels? And how are you guys going about doing that?
Well, it's really evolved. I mean, we've gone through we've had different editor in chiefs over the years, you know, a few times, but that's always expected. But we have had a constant at the same time, and Ben Alberstadt, who's you know, kind of manning it right now. He's been there for quite a long time. We have philosophies as far as getting writers, and we look for kind of passion first, because that's what we are. I always said that you know, our owner, Richard, our principal owner, I always love talking to him because I always, even if he's mad at me, I get off the phone and I'm charged up. You know, he's just very passionate about it. And I think that really trickles down to all of us. We're all golfers and, you know, golf nuts, you know, first and foremost. So we look to that first. And then, you know, make sure that the proper content can be created. So we have many different ways to do that. You know, it's not, we don't expect everybody to write like it's, we don't want a New York Times article.
Yeah.
That's not what we do.
Right.
We want something that's, you know, better, you know, more easily digestible, but not dumbed down in any way. I mean, we love equipment and love talking about it.
You talked about equipment and you talked about passion at Golf WRX, but I've never seen people get more passionate than when Anthony Kim is brought up on the forums.
Oh,
that guy,
it's awesome, isn't it?
That guy can bring everybody out. What are you hearing about Anthony Kim these days? You got to have something for the people.
I don't know anything more about Anthony Kim than you guys know, unfortunately, but he's probably got a PlayStation and an Xbox One. And he's pretty happy from what I hear about the insurance policy and so forth. Right?
Nice. Well, and you know, in that same vein, what are the biggest topics that, you know, the ones that get the most eyeballs on your site?
Well, every time the tour picks come out, they are huge. Every week we go out and usually Monday to Wednesday, take photos of what's in the bag. Like, we've got all the Arnold Palmer photos. We've got right now 6 galleries, I believe, that are up there. And then some breakout threads. Henrik Stenson. Like, if I go through it right now, there's Stenson, Charlie Hoffman, Keith Mitchell. Which, how many views did Keith Mitchell have previously?
Probably not many.
You know?
Hey, guys, you got to be careful. He didn't like that newspaper article that came out about him. He might not like it if we talk about his bag like that.
It was great. It's fantastic. And actually, on our podcast tomorrow on Two Guys Talking Golf, we're going to have Chris Voschel from Mizuno on.
Awesome. He's fantastic.
Oh, he's such a good guy.
Yeah.
Such a good guy. A pleasure to talk to. And whenever you touch someone he has that high energy, you know, really, really gets it going. So was that the first Mizuno driver win in, what, about 15 years or something?
Pretty much.
It's crazy.
Scott's got one in the bag right now, so that's not another win coming out.
Oh, interesting. Did you get fit for that? Because I know a guy.
Maybe.
Just letting you know. So, you know, tour. We have a tour and pre-release forum, and that gets the most eyes by far. And then BST, buy, sell, and trade, because, you know, you can get a club at a fraction of retail and you're not dealing with eBay fees and so forth. I mean, those are the two forums that get the most. But actually, believe it or not, when our editorial started taking off, it just got there was so many requests, not only from teachers to write for us or instructors to write for us, but also from members that they wanted more instruction. And we had to add right off the main nav, you know, an instruction tab, and just make it just kind of run with it. You know, we've had plenty of guys over the years, and I frequent it like nearly every day. I mean, we've got Me My Golf in there and various others that are great at it. And, you know, I do like the front page better than the forums, because, boy, you know, golfers get surly when you talk about methods and so forth. They get, it's like Thunderdome in there sometimes.
Yeah,
you know?
You don't want to dive in there too long. It gets pretty messy really quick.
You know, but people really are interested in that. So, yeah. You know, what's good is we have the ability to run with it. We want to add something, I can make a case and we can have it next week, you know, type of thing, which is really good.
You mentioned one of your podcasts on Golf WRX. I'm looking at the podcast page right now. It looks like you have quite a few. Why don't you give a quick rundown of the podcast and what you guys are hoping to achieve with those?
Oh, boy. Well, it is new for us. We started about 12 months ago, and we just passed over 1 million total listens.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, thank you. Thank you. It was great. And actually, last month was our most listened to month, you know, site-wide. all the different podcasts. We've got 19th Hole with Michael Williams, and Michael usually gets some really good guests on there. You know, he's got Greg Norman, Jim Nance, a lot of different people that he knows within the industry. We've got a Gear Dive podcast with Johnny Wonder, best name in possibly any industry.
I still don't think it's real, but anyway.
It's awesome.
I know it's real, but it's amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. He does Gear Dives. We've got On Spec with Ryan Barath, and we've got two guys talking golf. Ryan is a longtime club fitter. You've known him for a long time. He's lives in Hamilton, right? And he's great. He does videos as well, and I love watching them because I do not work on my own clubs. I wish I could, but there's only so many hobbies that my wife can tolerate.
Your wife barely tolerates you, let alone your hobbies, right?
For sure. And you know, I just can't even deal. I can't go into that get into that realm. I'm like, adjustable drivers, I'm good with that. I could do that. But everything else, forget about it. So we have a lot of different, we try to produce a lot of different content for everybody, and it's been a hit. We couldn't be happier.
I mean, obviously 15 years in, grown a great audience, got a lot of content that's there. What's next? Where does golfwrx.com go?
That's a good question. Well, we're always trying to improve at least the experience. So, I don't know. It could be semi breaking news in that we are going to do a big software upgrade on the back end. So
if you need testers, I know a guy.
I might recruit you, Trey.
You meant software on like, you know, coding and things. I meant like clothing. Sorry, never mind. I don't know a guy.
Oh, soft goods.
Yeah, that's what I was. I was looking. Yeah, we like to test equipment on this podcast.
I wouldn't call this fun testing. You know, we used to call it, I do have a background in, as I called it, hardcore programming. And what I mean by that is you're actually like compiling code and creating something, not like HTML kind of stuff. So this is kind of a lot of monkey testing. Go in and just mess around a while. So we're doing that, and hopefully that'll get turned on rather soon, and it'll give people a better experience, not only on the forum side, on the site, but mobile as well, because you know mobile's getting bigger and bigger. So it would be a nicer, easier, and better flow than even having an app you have to kind of worry about.
Before we wrap it up here, Rob, Scotty let me know you're a big Tragically Hip fan.
Yeah, huge Tragically Hip fan since 1990.
Wow.
Which is way back. It is a little weird for someone from New Jersey who went to college in, as I call it, South Central PA, would ever come across the Tragically Hip. But there was some sort of, back in the days of newspapers, you guys remember those, right?
Of course. Scott does. I do, at least. Yeah, sure, why not?
Still reads one every morning.
Yeah, you know, there was some music flyer or whatever that was in a record shop somewhere, and my friend picked it up and he's like, "New Orleans is sinking. I know this song. It was rated like number 2 for this random college radio station." And we went out and bought, I think it was the tape of Up to Here, and it was it from there. We were all Tragically Hip as much as possible. I saw them for the first time at the Road Apples tour, which was in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, Tower Theater, opening for Eric Johnson.
Much nicer than Lower Darby, of course.
Yeah, well, Upper Darby, it's not, I've never been back, let's put it that way. But when we first saw Gordon Downie on stage, we had no idea what to even think, because that was back in the day where he would spend the entire song, like 8 minutes, talking to the microphone. And I mean talking to the microphone and the stand like it was a person. It was amazing. We were like, we walked out of there like, what just happened? You know, and then, but it never swayed us. And then, you know, Tragically Hip, I've been to more shows of the Tragically Hip than any other band. And as a matter of fact, in my wedding ring inside, my wife inscribed, "You are ahead by a century." So
nice.
Yeah, pretty cool, right?
That's awesome. We obviously miss Gord, and we're hoping to get some of the boys on the podcast. They're big golfers, as you probably know.
I would love it. I know. I hear about it all the time. If there's ever a slot available, let me know. And some foursome. I'll tell you, that's one thing that I'd probably get on a plane and go on up there. We visited in we were talking a little bit earlier, and we did visit and saw a Leafs game. I bought the tickets, you know, online. I'm like, why are these so expensive? Brought the family, brought wife and two boys in November. And I figured out it was Hall of Fame induction weekend. So it was Leafs Devils. And we were the only people, I guarantee it, who flew from New Jersey to Toronto to root for Toronto to beat New Jersey, because I'm really a Ranger fan.
Nice. Well, really appreciate it, Rob. Great to hear about golfwrx.com and where it's headed. And we hope to catch up with you again soon.
Hey, thanks very much, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Rob Miller from Golf WRX. We really appreciate the interview. One of my favorite things about Golf WRX recently is I've been working on my game a little bit this winter. I've been reading a lot of the instructional tips that they have on their website, which if you're working on your game, you don't have a PGA professional you're working with, highly recommend doing that. But this is a good start. You can read some articles. And Scotty, you recently just posted your own article. Why don't you talk about that? What are you talking about in your newest teachings?
Well, I've been doing a lot of work lately with 3D stuff. So 3D stuff is basically putting sensors on your body and being able to measure,
like you see in like the video when they're making video games, yeah, like all the balls,
exactly, motion capture. Huh. It's basically it's same type of thing. It's just sensors, and they sort of measure what's going on, angles, tilts, all that sort of thing. One thing a lot of people will see is that they don't move their pelvis enough, and I think
we were talking about that today.
Yeah, I've looked at some of your video, and a lot of people were sort of taught through the years to kind of keep their hips sort of still, mm-hmm. and then twist their upper body over top of it and sort of create the X factor, is what, you know, you hear this term. Jim McLean coined that in a book. The problem is that a lot of people end up having their pelvis still, twist their upper body, create a lot of pressure on their lower back. They have a lot of shearing that can happen.
I've been dealing with a little bit of lower back.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know what? We do want to have some separation between your shoulders and your hips, but we still want your pelvis to turn. And actually, if you look and you look at the range, and granted, you know what? The average player is not a PGA Tour player, but the PGA Tour average is going to be 30 to 45 degrees that their hips will turn in the backswing. Nick, you look like you have a question here. You're looking at me.
I'm not focused because I'm learning here.
Okay. So what you'll find is that in the backswing, your pelvis will turn 30 to 45 degrees closed as you make a backswing. And what that does is that it does a couple things. It helps basically move the club a little bit deeper in behind you. So it helps you to, you know, get a better path as far as your swing is concerned. It helps you create a little bit more force in your golf swing as well. It's a little bit easier on your body. But one of the things we have to really understand is that our pelvis is actually moving kind of six different ways during the swing. So it's not just staying there stationary. So a lot of people really have to look at that in their golf swings, that they'd be not afraid to let it move a little bit as far as back and through. And it's really a core part of the sequence that's in your golf swing.
So a lot of, you're talking pelvis. You hear a lot of people talk about their hips moving. Are we talking roughly the same thing?
Yeah. So hips would be the left and right hip, mm-hmm. and your pelvis is obviously the center, mm-hmm. Which obviously holds your, you know, femurs. And making a backswing there. So, yeah, that's basically what we're talking about. So, for a right-handed player, for an example, what they would see is when they're making a backswing, their right hip would turn back away from the golf ball. Mm-hmm. That would be that rotation. You know, again, that's where we'd see, you know, 30 to 45 degrees. Depends on your flexibility. And that's one thing that people will have to understand if they're working with a golf coach, is try to make sure that you're doing things that are within the limitations of your body. So they might have a screening process that they put you through to see how much flexibility you have, because asking somebody to do something that they can't physically do is not going to help you in your golf swing.
Well, actually, I was watching a before and after swing of Francisco Molinari, who just won.
Great example.
And that was one thing that I was obviously aware of it because of our conversation today, but the difference from 6 years ago, he gained 20 yards of driving distance in the last 6 years. And the main part that he claims is that just a slight lift of that left heel on his backswing allowed him to get more of that coil.
Yeah. Some players, if you look at Rory, for an example, he has the flexibility in his hips to be able to make that pelvis turn and keep his foot flat. It's not necessarily
one or the other that you have to do. There's no right. It's what's right for each of those people. So for him, Francesco Molinari, for an example, that helps his pelvis turn and move back. That helps get pressure into his trail leg, creates a little bit more club head speed, and away you go.
And I'm built somewhere in between the two of them. I don't have as big of a barrel as Francesco Molinari, and I'm not as ripped as Rory. I'm trying. I'm not going to get there, I don't think.
Not this week.
No, well, I mean, I'm going to Mexico.
Yeah,
I'm going backwards, guys. Everything I've done in the last couple months is gone. So somewhere in between, where my thought was always, I got to keep that heel locked down.
Right.
It was probably an old teacher taught me, like, yep, you don't want to lift that heel up, but yep, now clearly you've said it's not necessarily about that anymore. It's more about doing what's best for you. And the key here, that if there's anything we need to get out of this, is go see a PGA professional. If there's anything that you really need to be working on, you know, we know a great one, and obviously in our co-host, we're lucky to have him give us some tips and tricks here and there, but go find one. Where can you go find one in your area?
Basically, you can go to the PGA of Canada, their website, and they actually have a Find a Pro section that's there, and you can actually put in the city wherever you live, and it'll actually give you the name back of all the different pros that are in your area. It also has bios up there on all them, so you can look and kind of sort through. Best advice would be to call a few up, you know, have an introduction with them, have a little meeting, kind of see if you align up, you know, from a personality wise, what your goals are, what they can do for you, and then you can find a coach that way.
Don't forget to tell them Flags Thick sent you, and more specifically, T-Talk, because we're talking them up right now. Let's dive into the Players. The Players is next week, Scotty. One of the best tournaments of the year. It's, you know, I would say the fifth best tournament of the year behind. It's the strongest field of the year, regardless, compared to the majors. Does it bring the same excitement for you, though, Scotty?
It doesn't, just because it doesn't have the same history. That's the only thing for me. You know, I look back, and obviously, you know, it's, you're talking a 40-some-odd year history. That's not the same as all the other majors. So it doesn't have that heritage. Strength of field, obviously it does. As far as drama, definitely. That golf course is definitely a dramatic golf course. The neat part for some people is that it's a familiar golf course.
That's true.
It's one that they go back to every year. Everybody starts to become familiar with, you know, 16, 17, 18, as far as those holes.
Great stretch of holes.
Yeah, so I mean, that breeds familiarity. Obviously, they have a fantastic purse, huge purse. The tour is going to put everything into it because this is an event they run. This is their major that they run. Is it the fifth major? You know, that's arguable. I heard David Duval talking on the Golf Channel, and he kept referring to the fact there were five majors, and I think that was maybe a slip. But I think a lot of players realize its importance, and especially if you look at, you know, the exemptions it provides, the money it provides, the prestige. In that sense, it's a major, but just because it doesn't have the heritage, I think that's where it sort of misses for me. What about you?
On Sunday, it's always exciting. It's pretty rare that there's somebody that's just running away from this tournament. If the wind gets going, it's interesting. And my first thought is always that 17th hole, and that it almost, that's where everybody kind of thinks. It's like, oh, it's a par three that is just surrounded, an island green par three, which... Sidebar, have you ever seen the video of the guy that he had the highest score ever?
Oh, yeah.
And they make
him
play
that hole. He played a round.
Yeah, he played a round. Yeah. He shot like 200 and something, but yeah, he gets the 17. I think he shot like 100 or something on that hole. You got to find it on YouTube. He goes around the water. He putts it around the water because he can't hit
it. So bad. Yeah. So, yeah, Golf Digest used to do a contest. It was the worst golfer in America. Yeah.
Avid golfer in America. Yeah, yeah. Like, so, he plays 50 rounds a year.
Yeah. So they
you would have beat this. You would hit it. It's a 120-yard hole, and he shot 100.
Right. So they thought, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take this person out to the most penal golf course that everybody knows. I mean, there's harder golf courses that are out there, but this is the one that people are familiar with. And yeah, 17, he ended up having to play around and down the path, and it's something. So, and it's not a long shot. I mean, if you get there, have you played wooden sticks in Ontario?
I have not,
here?
But everybody says the same thing. It's just not a hard shot. It's just intimidating.
So they've got a replica hole, but that green's even smaller than the one at Sawgrass. Sawgrass, it's pretty big. Now, the wind's going everywhere. There'll be lots of people there. It's drama. It's for a lot more money. I'm sure if you went there and, you know, the crowd wasn't there, it's, you know, a lot easier shot. It's going to be a lot harder when it's coming down to the final round and the Players. But, yeah. So, I mean, is it gimmicky?
I would disagree it's gimmicky.
I don't think it is now. I think you're right. It's different. It's maybe not traditional. But I think that familiarity for a lot of people, it's an event of importance. We'll give it a 0.5. So maybe we have 4.5 majors.
I think that's fair. For me, the selling feature I believe that they should be doing with this tournament is that anybody in that field could win that tournament. Where a lot of the turns you have, like, there's certain tournaments where if Dustin Johnson's on his game, he's going to win just from the like being able to hit it long and long and long. I'm going to go over some past winners of this tournament. You got Webb Simpson, who won last year. He's not a long hitter by any means. He's good for a shank at least once a round. Kim Si-woo, I've never even heard of this person, and he won 2 years ago.
Si-woo Kim, but yeah.
Sorry, Wikipedia.
I know, it's yeah, just... Yeah.
But then you got Jason Day, then you got Ricky Fowler, then you got Martin Keimer, and you got Tiger Woods. You got Stephen Ames. Stephen Ames won the Players before. So it really does feel like anybody can win the tournament. Tim Clark, talk about a guy that fell off the face of the earth. Where is he?
Injuries.
Yeah, well, that's fair. But as I said, anybody could win. It's going to be exciting. And those last couple holes really, you know, if it's tight, anything can happen.
Yeah, I think that's the magic of that golf course, if I'm using the word magic really properly. But I think the mystique of that golf course and the fact that you can play it a lot of different ways. And you can be a different player. And obviously, they're qualified players to get there. And as you said, anybody can win. So obviously, if they're in the field, they've earned their way in there. They're a skilled player. But the style of play doesn't necessarily matter as much there. They don't need to be a long hitter. They don't need, you know what I mean? They just have to get the ball in the hole. They have to find a way to get around that golf course. And that's, I think, when I go back and say the magic, that's the brilliance of that design by Pete Dye with input from Alice Dye. The fact that they, you know, they test every aspect of your game. It's really about how you plot your way around the golf course and execute shots, not so much of going, you know, bomb gouge, one style of player. So anybody can win. And yeah, as a result of that, that makes it a little bit more interesting.
You mentioned, you know, bombers, you know, they're technically not at a huge advantage at this course. Right now, Dustin Johnson is the betting favorite for next week with Rory shortly, just a short distance behind Justin Thomas after that. If you were to put money on somebody next week, who are you betting on right now, Scotty?
Who am I betting on? Well, Francesco's not a bad bet.
He's not far
behind.
He's
got momentum. I mean, Matt Fitzpatrick, you know, I mean, yes, it's easy to go with the hot hand. I mean, you know, obviously players have played well going into it. Would I drop a few quid on Rory? I don't know if I would right now as far as how he's hitting it around there. Keith Mitchell
is on fire.
Keith Mitchell?
Here's, I'm going to throw two names out for you.
Okay, you throw two, and then maybe I won't have one of those, and I'll put one in for
my,
you.
My two, if you're looking at, you know, potentially making some money, actually, I'm going to give you three. Potentially making some money, Xander Schauffele, he could easily win that tournament. He's that guy that people just forget about, so you do sometimes get some pretty good odds on him. John Rahm's been very quiet this year, so watch out for big John Rahm. Bryson's been quiet as well. He could turn it around any week. So if I'm throwing some money, it's probably on one of those three guys right now. Just for the odds of things.
I will throw one in there, Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, despite his third round, you know, he shot 76 at Bay Hill, he would have taken down that tournament. He would have. I mean, he would have been 13 under. He would have won by one. So he's such a great ball striker. I think that's a major advantage around there. He's not a guy who hits it really crooked, doesn't have a big shape to his tee shots. I mean, maybe that's why Phil is struggling. I mean, he shapes the ball a lot, but Fleetwood is the kind of guy with the precision to hit the shots that could win that. And, you know, that would be a big breakout for him.
That would be awesome. And let's obviously hope Tiger's feeling better and he can get back in the field after missing last week. I think this is a great time to wrap it up. Everybody enjoy the Players. We will be back next week. You're going to get my take on the Players from Mexico. So I'm going to be down there. I'm going to apologize now. I don't know what state I'll be in when you give me a call. But I will be watching it down at some sort of sports bar in Cancun or wherever we're going.
We're looking forward to your in-depth analysis.
Oh, it's going to be in-depth. And maybe I'll get like Gary from South Carolina,
sure,
who's down
just,
there.
We'll just mix it in. We'll, yeah, that'd be great.
We'll pass Gary the phone.
Pass the mic around on the beach.
Yeah,
that would be perfect.
Exactly. Why not? We appreciate everyone listening. We need to remind you to subscribe to the podcast on any sort of platform that you like to listen to podcasts on. Rate us. Five stars only, right, Nick?
That's it.
5 stars only. Again, we really appreciate it. Download the episodes. Any feedback you have, feel free to reach out to us. Where can they reach out to us, Scotty?
Come to flagstick.com. We've got an info at Flagstick there. You can send emails that way, or else catch us on Twitter at Flagstick or at Flagstick Golf on Instagram.
Or you can catch me at Steedorf. Nick, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter if you'd like. Nick Gallinger.
Nice.
There we go. No excuses, people. You can always reach out and have a chat with us.
All right, guys. We'll wrap it up there. Thank you for listening to Tee Talk. And remember, if you hit it into the fence, just take it out of the fence and take a drop. Don't be an idiot. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.